kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I didn't die between the last show and this one, so I guess I'm okay.
That's progress for all of us.
It's a surprisingly low bar, but one that's kind of difficult to meet sometimes.
It's one I'm glad I was able to clear this week as well. So
I'm glad you were able to clear it, too.
Yeah,
I'm
glad we all saw another bar. Day.
I'm glad we're all here to see another week of this podcast.
Another week of this bullshit. Speaking of another week of this bullshit, we got Tim, we've got Pernell, and we've got Chris joining us.
If I'm going to be any kind of shit, it's going to be some premium shit. We're talking like freaking bald eagle gazelle shit.
All right, bald eagle shit, Pernell.
That's right.
Top shelf shit.
Bullshit is too low grade. I'm higher grade than that.
Tim, what kind of shit are you? If you don't want to be bullshit.
Oh, I don't want to.
or are you okay just being bullshit?
I don't identify as shit.
He's like, I don't accept any sort of indicator related to shit or shit like products. Chris is like, I'm winning Texas Bulls. Shit.
This conversation just now reminded me that I should probably be finding good pastor articles.
Oh, come on. He's not that bad. He's at least dub. He's dub shit. Come on.
Very unique.
Yes.
So how's everyone doing?
I've been fighting a sneeze since the phone started.
Let it go. So just let it rip.
I can't now, though. Like, I was going to just let it go, and then it just is like, nope, it's got stage fright.
Yeah, that's how it goes. You can't just, like, will it into existence.
Yeah, my eyes twitching now, and water, and sneeze is just hanging there.
Or at least Jeffrey into existence. That's the way you do it. Fresh Prince, crap, old 90s humor. No one gets that anymore.
I'm just gonna shake my head.
As you should. That's how it works. You nod, you do that thing where you cha-cha-cha and everybody's happy. You know, just gets through the day.
So what's going on? Normally, like, at the start of a call, y'all just talk about fucking everything. And now this I hit record.
You put us on the spot, and we're just like, nah, bro, that's not how.
And now you're just we have nothing to talk about. Let's just do it. No.
You demand shenanigans, and you will not get them.
I have to like sneak attack I gotta do the intro and then start Skype and hope everything's recording.
Yes.
And you'll just never know.
It's like a sneeze. You can't will it into existence.
Cannot.
I'm just shenanigans out for the week. That's my problem.
Why are you shenanigans out?
I'm doing all kinds of dumb shit for attempts at changing numbers and fixing budgets and crap. It's insane, and it drains you. It leaves you a smoldering heap of wondering as to how you managed to get this far in life as it stands. Because holy fuck, I don't make any goddamn money. Yeah, I'm like, how is this working again? How am I doing? It's like, have you ever had a scenario in your life where you just kind of coasted the entire fucking time? Like, you did certain things. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't like you had no movements or planning, but you just kind of coasted. And you didn't look at it much. You just were happy with what you did. And then one day you thought, maybe I should be doing this better. Let me take a deeper look at what the fuck I've been doing for the last, I don't know, my entire life. And I decided to
take a look at what I've been doing for the past 8 years and see what I can improve on.
Well, there you go. It's like, you're like, you know, I've been doing great so far. I don't care. I'm happy. I'm doing what I want to do. And then one day you say, I want to look into what I've been doing and see just what it was and how to improve it if possible. Maybe make it a little bit better. And then you start to do like, holy fuck, this is what I've been doing. Shit,
fucking yeah,
fucking fix here. But how do I do it? Because I'm fucking broke. It's like it's been that life. Like I don't know. Like
I got Cole, look at you gifting a sub to Raider Biz.
Yay!
I don't know, why'd you go and do that?
So they could have wet pancakes.
That makes sense.
To Raider Biz? Is there a person named Raider Biz?
In chat, yeah.
There it is. So you gave
Raider Biz. You know how much you miss by not just being in chat?
I don't know, that's part of the fun.
You need to have, like, chat pulled up on a tablet or something so you could keep up to date. You have, what, two laptops you could be using to be on Twitch?
No, that one's still in a box.
Yeah, that's why I don't see when people say, who the fuck is that guy? I'm like, I'll never know.
You could give us two views with your two laptops. And bump those numbers up by two. But no, instead you miss out on the chat.
Get that Glengarry Jim Ross going there.
We'd be on the road to partner. But no.
We're on the road to partner.
Was it like 100 average viewers or something like that? Some bullshit like that?
70, I think.
Ooh, 70.
What do they average? What's the time period they average it from?
Like your whole stream?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of unfair, because if someone's like going like a good 2 years with nothing, and then one day they hit the boom, like, okay, and they always have to wait like another 2 years to balance this shit out. Like,
they purposely do that. So like, if you're getting rated frequently, raid views don't count like that.
Yeah.
And raid views actually, like, they barely count, because a raid causes you to host another channel from your channel, but they have to go to your channel. Like, the viewers that participate in the raid have to take that extra step.
Yeah.
In order to count. Or it doesn't count. Yeah. So, and a lot of it's, I only ever see it when people are actually pushing for partner that they'll even mention that, you know, that they'll be like, oh, by the way, please click on my actual name or something. Instead of,
well, we're never going to have to worry about getting to partner, but thank you, Raider Biz, for dropping 100 biddies. So, Cole drops a sub and Raider Biz drops 100 biddies.
And I dropped a steak because, cow.
Oh, man, I would love a steak right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because never a bad time for a cheesesteak. I don't even eat meat like that anymore, and I'm still eating a cheesesteak if you hand me one. Fuck that. That's one of the exceptions to the rule.
I'm sad because Ashley and I, our anniversary is on March 16th, and that's like when things went to shit last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we never got to go to Outback for our anniversary.
Mm.
And we just have gift cards waiting to be used at Outback.
Just hold on to them, and when you do, just double down and like eat like two meals or some shit.
Yeah, and then our anniversary rolled around this year, and nope, still no Outback. I mean,
the anniversary is in the home, in the heart, not in the Outback.
No, we it's got at really the Outback.
Lucky. No, it's at
no, it's an Outback Steakhouse.
This wedding is over. Really or this
Captain's Mai Tai. Yeah, we need the Captain's Mai Tai for the anniversary to be complete.
What are you doing in this divorce office? You guys seem fairly happy. Yeah, but Outback says otherwise. So we need to wrap this up.
We got really lucky last year because our anniversary is February 28th. And so we went out for our anniversary, and then 2 weeks later, everything shit the bed. Mm. But then we had to pay for that transgression this year, and we spent our anniversary sitting in a cold house without electricity for 3 weeks. So,
in your face.
So, really, we did not win in the long run.
I think you got a stimmy. That's
adequate, yeah.
Below adequate, but something. It sucks.
I did use that stimulus to buy an Xbox Series X and a one or a Series S. So
would you both me and what the do you think upgraded. Of them so far?
They're so fancy.
Wait, you have an X and an S is what I heard, or you only have the S?
We upgraded ours and we upgraded the kids. For us, it's a bigger jump in quality because number one still had the fat Xbox in her room, the original Xbox One. So she didn't even get an S or an X upgrade last gen. And we only upgraded to a 1S in the living room. So we didn't get a 1X when those came out. We couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a bigger jump in quality than a lot of people. Because I know there were a few people who were like, oh yeah, it's super fast now, but it doesn't look that much different graphically. And for us, we're just like, why is everything so pretty?
Did you play dirt yet? I'm gonna keep harping on you about Dirt.
I played a little bit of Immortals. That looked incredible. David has been going hard on Valhalla. That looks incredible. And then I've played mostly indies that do not need that graphical power whatsoever.
Actually, it's kind of funny. We're talking about next gen systems because that just goes elite into like where the hell I'm at right now with stuff, because I actually have a next gen system now and it's just sitting in the box in the corner because I'm just like,
what do you have?
I ended up getting the PS5 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? I'm just like, you haven't opened it yet? What the fuck is wrong with you?
There's been a lot of changes in my life lately. I've been doing some shit. But I'd already agreed to the acquisition of the system. So I was like, I'll just go through it. I'll take it. So I got it. And it's like, so what are you going to do? I better go jog. So it's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm tired. I've been doing all this stuff today. I'm going to go to bed. Or what are you doing? Well, I got to hit the arcade today and drop some weights. So, or what are you going to do? This stupid fucking budget. Like, it's been weird lately. My mind is in a place. I don't know how I got here. I don't know when it's leaving. It's not all bad, I'll admit. I mean, I'm trying to make decisions and stuff. But the downside is, like, I look at that system, I'm just like, it's not, doesn't feel the same. Like, what are you going to play, Pernell? You could be playing Demon's Souls right now. I'm like, but I'd rather play Get a Grip Chip in 5-minute intervals on the Switch before going to bed. Like, hey, that's where I'm at right now.
One, it's perhaps not surprising that your mind might be going insane after a year of this shit. Let's face it. Like, a lot of people lost it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Two, I know you got Persona 5 Strikers and probably haven't played it in like a month, but you slip that into your PS5.
Because does that get like an upgrade or anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. I didn't even know those games got upgraded on the system. I just was like,
it's real nice. Well, I think it's on the, if you had a whatchamacallit,
I'm lacking whatchamacallit.
A whatchamacallit, like a PS4 Pro. Mm-hmm. Like you had the option of like, here's performance mode or here's, high resolution mode. But on PS5, you just get both. And seeing a Persona game in, at 60 frames per second is both really weird and also really cool at the same time.
That might be worth checking out at some point. Yeah, because I never even got a Pro. I'm rocking the normal Xbox One and I'm rocking the normal PS4. I never did any of the upgrading stuff. So yeah,
it looks real nice.
I can't believe you're just sitting on a PS5.
I can. I mean, how much stuff is sitting in his house unopened? Come on now.
Well, this is admittedly different even beyond laptops. That. Cause like,
yeah, this is something even for you.
Yeah, for me, yeah, because like consoles, I open my consoles and play them, even if it's just to set them up, or like see what's on the store or anything. Like, I always do that. The laptop thing was weird because it was like, but I have a perfectly functioning laptop right now. This was just, for when it dies, which it's living way longer than this laptop had any right to survive for. That's for damn sure, but I'm not complaining. Two laptops is great. But with this is like, I just don't care. It's like, it's just there. Like, and like the Monster Hunter game, I was like, I bought that thinking, everyone's talking about it. I like Monster Hunter. So clearly that'll do the trick. That'll get my juices going. And I bought it. I made my character and I ran around town like, okay, time to go on a hunt. And I'm like, just threw it aside. Like, I'm done. And it's just been like that for weeks now. It's just been crazy. But I don't know. It's a brave new world in my mind here. And I don't know where it's taking me. But I'm listening to...
It might take you to therapy. Or it might need to.
I don't know. I mean, like, I normally would drive. I went to Baltimore not too long ago. And normally on those drives, I'm listening to, like, indie stations and stuff like that. I spent the entire drive listening to finance podcasts and like stock investments and investor things of what the fuck a Bitcoin is. And like, it's like, wow, this doesn't happen ever, but now I'm doing this. And not only that, I was okay with it. It wasn't like I'm begrudgingly doing it or anything. I was like, this is informative. I'm glad to hear this. I'm taking notes with my notepad in the passenger seat and my hand scrawling on it while I'm driving with my left hand. All that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's just crazy. Like, it's a little, it's a different side right now. So it's like, it's good to have, like, I do this show for, like, game dialogue and, like, reviews, and I still have Rhythm and Pixels for, like, music chat and stuff like that. But when it comes to just, like, hey, I'm going to just sit down and play this game, it's like, it doesn't really happen anymore. But it almost reminds me of, like, how I was back when I broke up with, when I broke up with that girl, like, years ago. Correct, let me rephrase that. She dumped my ass because she cheated on me. And I kind of went, I didn't have any motivation to play any games for like a year. Like, if it wasn't a review for this show, actually, I wasn't even doing reviews for this show yet. So there you go. Doing reviews for the show is what got me back into playing games in general again. And then Persona 5 is what got me playing games flat out again. But same logic. It was like, for that whole year, like, after I played a little bit of Digimon Cyber Sleuth, and then I played nothing. I just kind of bought games here and there because that's just what I was used to doing to feel okay. And then beyond that, I was like, eh. But this isn't even depression. This is just some odd desire
just for the change.
It's not even a festive thing. It's not even a funk. No. Though I guess it kind of is, because a funk would it, like, it's like, I do other stuff, but at the same time, there's also small pockets of time where I could technically be playing something. But then when that time happens, that's when I'm just like, kind of like, eh. So maybe it's a combination of a desire for changes, but also a funk. Because if it weren't a funk, I'd use the time that's in the middle to still play stuff. Which I guess maybe I do. Because like I said, I play Get a Grip Chip, which everyone in his chest like, what the fuck is that game? And I'm like, exactly.
I honestly thought you were making it up.
No, that's a real game. Like, there's been like a couple of threads lately where people, you know, the usual, like, what are you guys playing? And everybody will name the big guys. Like, I'm playing Demon's Souls, or, you know, I'm playing Crash 4. What are you playing, Pernell? Daddish. It's like, what? Like, I'm playing a game called Daddish. You're a radish father looking for his radish babies.
I didn't remember that game.
Yeah, it's like, that game is doing the trick for me. Like, I do, and it's like, again, I play it like in like 5 minute bits after like one stage. Like, okay, I'm going to bed, or okay, time to bring up this freaking like Udemy course or something. But it's just, that's how I've been lately. It's been strange. Like, Persona 5 Strikers, when I first started playing that, I was into it. I was having a good time doing the first palace, or I guess they're jails now, whatever. And I got to like a boss there. Kicked my ass. I was like, okay, I need to come back a little bit later, or, you know, upgraded my character equipment. But then I just never went back. I never booted it up. And you might be thinking, well, you must not like Persona 5 Strikers. Quite the contrary. I think the game's great. I had a great time playing it. In fact, it went beyond my expectations. I thought it was going to be like Dynasty Warriors with Personas. And it's like, no, this is actually fun.
Suck it, Dynasty Warriors.
I've played those games and I hate them. I've tried. I've really tried.
Now we're never going to get a Dynasty Warriors game on to review.
That's like the one time where it's like, keep that shit. We don't want it. It's a terrible game. No,
we like Dynasty Warriors.
Who here like, you like Dynasty Warriors?
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, give it to Joe.
The opinions of Pernell do not represent those of SML Pernell.
I already had to go through this with, like, the opinions of my staff do not reflect the opinions of me.
You'll love through this
fucking, a week and a half ago with hockey, and now I gotta go through it again with you hating Dynasty Warriors.
If you like Dynasty Hockey, you'll like this then, I think. So, I haven't done it in a while because time has been a bitch, but I also write reviews for Hey Poor Player on occasion. And I did it, they was like, you want to review Dynasty Warriors 9? This was like, I guess whenever it came out, like 2 years ago or whatever. And I was like, well, I don't like Dynasty Warriors, but this would be an opportunity to be an actual reviewer because you're not supposed to like every game you play. So I took it, I was playing it, and I'm like, okay, try to cross how you feel about a game with how you would expect the fans to feel about the game. Like, what do they usually get out of a Dynasty Warriors game? You know, large waves of enemies, overpowered generals, you know, just like, crazy brawls and super moves, and then equipping gear to make your guy even stronger. And maybe sometimes a few partnerships here and there. So I'm playing the game, I'm like, okay, now it's open world. This is okay. I mean, I don't remember Dynasty Warriors landscapes being beautiful in the past, so they look about what I expect. Cool. Okay, outpost battles, fortress battles, okay. And my review basically said, this seems to be what Dynasty Warriors fans generally get with their normal games, except now it's open world, and there's like these random fetch quests for by killing and hunting animals. With that in mind, I feel as though this is a game that a Dynasty Warriors fan could like. It didn't quite grab me as fully as it could have, but I liked it more than I expected to. And I gave it a decent rating. And people were like, you were bought and sold by Tecmo-Koi. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? They didn't pay me shit. I've never gotten a check in my life from this junk.
Say, and it's like, people think we get paid for this shit?
People are seriously claiming that I was bought and sold by Tecmo-Koi because Dynasty Warriors 9 is the worst Dynasty Warriors that was ever made, and I liked it. So I was like, I can't even get that shit right. I was livid. I was like, how in the world?
You don't even hate the franchise properly, Purnell.
Exactly. Hate it better. You need to hate Dynasty Warriors better. The one we all like, the one we all hate, you like? Clearly something's fucked up. Like, yeah. This game is weird. And I even made comments about stuff like the fact that, like, it was like a boss fight early in the game, and now stop rambling, where you fight like a level 30 guy, and you're supposed to outrun him because you're meant to lose the fight or escape. And I was like, eh, I'm level 1 or 2. I can beat him. And I just chipped away at his health until he died, because that's just how that game works. You can exploit the combat. So I beat the guy and won. And I was like, the levels barely matter in this game. I beat a level 30 guy that I was supposed to run from on my first try. And I don't even play these games. And I don't know, maybe that was one of the reasons people hated it. Like, you're not supposed to be able to beat Lao Boo or whatever the hell it is. Lu Boo, Lu Bao, Gu Cao. I just remember it's like the... It's like a, you know what I'm talking about. There's like a whole meme about the dude. Do not pursue Lu Bu or something. But it was him.
I like Gu Cao.
Gu Cao. Oh, there was also that one old guy in the yellow outfit. He's like, the yellow turbans. I got this very weird voice that makes me sound like I'm from the country, but not fully into the country. I'm really excited about raising cows and also bringing together China. yeah, that
sounds like a neat guy.
He's a great character, but his voice is hilarious. Like, you would not expect it. It's not because his voice is bad so much as it's really exaggerated. You would not expect a general in the fucking Dynasty Warriors environment, like he's more of a priest, but still, to sound like that. Like, it did not fit. It's like they got a janitor to do the voice. Like, hey, you want an extra $5? Come here to the sound booth and say these lines. Okay. Yellow turbans. Okay, here you go. Go home. Beach family. But that's what I got out of that. That's my story about Dynasty Warriors. I'm done rambling. Anyway, I'm apathetic about games lately. But Dynasty Warriors, rant.
Real apathetic.
God damn. I don't even know where to go with that. Should we go into reviews?
Probably.
Yeah. Those segues, like, speaking of, I don't know what the fuck's going on, let's talk about reviews.
Purnell hates games. Let's talk about games.
First game we're going to talk about is Dynasty Warrior 12.
You beat dudes up with a spear, and you're overpowered, and you can pursue Lu Bu, because fuck that guy.
That would be so funny. It's like, well, this is kind of awkward, but first game is Dynasty Warriors 9. Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, I pursued Lu Bu, and I won. I powered up and then won China.
Now there's actually a different franchise. SML
podcast totally sold out.
Yeah, we did.
Can't believe this. That review was the most payola review I've ever heard.
We sold out when we went to the SML After Dark adult reviews.
Leisure Suit Larry. Who likes this? Wait, don't answer that.
No. Purnell, have you not heard some of Aki's reviews?
I've heard a couple of her. She gets raunchy.
Like, she got full-on porn games to review.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I do need to listen to some other ones. I thought she was getting ones that, you know, the usual censor stuff. Like, hey,
I mean, some here and there, but like every now and again, you get a. She says, I want more porn games to review. Of course, she wants more porn games to review.
There's one porn game just opens the door for two more. It never stops.
Got to get all
there
the porn.
There was this Castlevania
on the show.
Porn game that actually looked pretty fun. I can't remember what
it's
called.
I don't even
want
to think about that. Like, I don't want to go to the level where you have to fuck the mud men. Like, that just sounds horrible to me.
Oh my!
No, but it was like it's an actual like old school side scroller. It just also has lots and lots of porn in it.
All right. Well, switching from porn to not porn, the first game to talk about tonight is called Neptunia Virtual Stars.
Hey, I thought you said
there's no porn in this game. Don't even do that. We're in professional mode now.
Yes, professional.
Oh, okay. go for
okay,
it.
Okay, let's bring it together. All right. Neptunia Virtual Stars, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International. Released March 2nd on PS4, March 29th on Steam for $49.99. Band together with virtual idols to save planet emote in this music-based hack and slash. Cornell, tell us about Neptunia Virtual Stars.
Before going into the review, I want to state this real quick. Just
he
to
needs
get
another tangent first.
No, this is related to the game. Have you ever played a game? Like, you know, we talk about how we get older, but we're not going to be like our parents. We're going to be able to keep up with the times and understand what the hell's going on and stuff. But then one day you realize something's happened. You missed something. You missed a trend, and now you feel a little lost. Well, thank you, Neptunia Virtual Stars, for being that moment for me. Because the main hook for this entire game is based off of a trend that I am not familiar with. Or rather, I wasn't, because the game has kind of brought me on board. That trend being virtual idols. The idea behind that. I can't, my bad. So the idea behind Neptunia Virtual Stars is that Planet Emote is under attack by the anti-army. And it is up, and the goddess, after being overwhelmed, decided she needed help. So she reached out into the void to seek out people who could defend her planet. And who does she get? She gets the usual four goddesses from, you know, I guess, game industry. That being Neptune, was it Vert, and Blanc, and Noir. But also...
You seem made up.
They're real names. They're real fake names. and in addition to that, she pulls a ridiculous amount of virtual idols from our world to come help her. And most, if not all, of the virtual idols get immediately captured or in the verge of being captured by the anti-army. Only two of them did not. That would be me and you from the band Mutual. That is their names. I was honestly rather confused for a short period of time when they refer to themselves as me and you. But they all come together to try to save this planet from the army. And the way they do that is in the form of a, as you said, it's a weird combination of hack and slash and gun games. So how they do this is you have two different control styles that are based off of the type of characters you're using. There are the four goddesses who are considered goddess type characters. And then there's the two, which then you get two more later, virtual idol characters who get the idol controls. The goddesses all use guns. So, you know, lock on fire, spray. If you press the A button, or sorry, the, I guess it was, I'm on the laptop, so it doesn't even fucking matter. you press the boost button, and you're freaking like, you get like a dash mode where you're kind of skating around the arena, basically meant for circle strafing enemies and stuff with your gun. The V idols, however, are different. Rather than get the circle straight dashing button, they get the dodge button. So you press that button and they kind of like get out of the way. And if you time it just right, you get a bit of a boost. Also, they're more melee focused than the Neptune girls. And so when you use like their weapons, you get like a keytar sword and like a bow, which is kind of funny because that is technically not a melee weapon, but it's also not a gun. So think of it like that. So they get that control style. In addition to that, if you finish off as an idol, if you finish off an enemy with a special move, you can press the button one more time to do like a special finisher attack, which gives like special perks like regenerating like your health or MP or whatever. You also get general special.
Is this like an arena action game? Is that what's going on?
No, think of it like a dungeon crawler of sorts. Like, so.
Okay, all right.
Like, so it is, map. Okay. Yeah, it's like you go
you
from
said
like,
arena, so I was like, oh, I didn't.
Okay. I guess it's not too far from that because it's this, you know, the style where it's like you go from zone area to area within a dungeon, but when the enemies come out, it's just like a big square and it's like fight in the square, so it's like an arena. You also get special attacks too that are associated with your face buttons. Hold down the one, like the trigger button essentially, and then hit one of the face buttons corresponding to the special attack, and you do it. Now, all that stuff is fairly par for the course, but the main difference and the thing that makes it special being that you switch between the two types of controls on the fly. If you use a goddess character, you switch to goddess type. If you want to use a V-idol character, you switch to the V-idol type. And then once you're in that mode, you can switch between one of the four goddesses or one of the four V-idols, which essentially means you're controlling between eight different characters during the game. without needing to, like, say, go do something special to switch that up. It's kind of different, I'll say, but I kind of like that part. There's no general, like, equipment in this game. What I mean by that is, like, you don't get new guns and you don't get new armor in the traditional sense. Instead, you get these two things. You get cosmetic items, which can also unlock, like, special perks to them once you've used them enough and upgraded them. So, like, for example, you might get, like, a cool mask that once you put the mask on in dress-up mode and use it the right amount of times, you'll unlock different perks that can be used while wearing the mask. Also, as you're exploring this world, every once in a while, whether you end up fighting and killing a monster that has one or getting it out of a chest, you get V-Idol cores. V-Idol cores are essentially the essence of a captured V-Idol that was rescued by you and then sent home. But their lingering memories stay in the cube and are able to help you by being equipped and giving you stat bumps. So yes, you're equipping V-Idols. Interesting concept, but there you go. So those are the two ways you can kind of build up and augment your characters. Now, as far as the dungeon crawling and stuff goes, it's typical NIST stuff, or correction, not NIST, typical Compile Heart stuff, which means kind of no frilly, just big open spaces, running around, jumping sometimes, whatever. But the one thing I did like about it that made it stand up from the normal fare is that there are, like, monitors all over the different dungeons. And those monitors will actually play video of the actual V-Idols sometimes. So you might hear one out of nowhere being like, staying in Japanese, go for it, kick their asses or whatever. And sometimes you might shoot the monitor and they'll go, oh, you're a fan here, take some cool items or something. And these are apparently all real V-Idols. Like, I asked, he was like starting to type their names into Google to see if they came up, and they do. There's a lot of V-Idols in this game. So if that's your cup of tea, you're in fucking heaven with this game, because this is clearly a big undertaking as far as that fandom is concerned. Even the load screens, the load screens are V-Idol like introductions. So you might go to a load screen, have this like random like character, yeah, like, hi, I'm such and such, do you love me? Press this button, subscribe to my channel, or go to this thing. Like, it's weird.
And subscribe yet it also to our kind channel. Of, click below the video.
That's and how we should do it on this channel. I do, you know, love what, me. Yeah. Please subscribe.
So I guess so. Basically, what Chris is telling us is that he's going to come up with a new V-Idol alter ego named Yum Yum Chan, and she's going to be like 19 years old.
Welcome to SML. I'm Yum Yum Chan. Yum Yum Chan.
This is my life's calling.
The SML virtual idol.
Which, by the way, speaking of which, one thing that made me feel surprised was one of the idols that came up in the game. I looked it up. Apparently, it's actually like a 70-year-old man who is like a 17-year-old like V-Idol girl in the V-Idol world. So I'm like, how the fuck does any of this work?
All right, I'm going to have a discussion with Norg about this. But
but I'll get like one more gameplay element to the game before I go too far, because this is a lengthy review, because there's a lot of weird stuff in this game. So one other element that I thought was pretty interesting as far as gameplay is concerned is how boss fights work. So, normal games, a boss fight is, you know, a freaking boss fight. In this game, it's not too far off the mark there, but one difference is the boss fights have music that plays over them. Think of it like they're called music video battles. So, you choose a idol song. The idol song will play over the boss fight. So, boss music in this game is actually V-Idol songs. And, depending on the V-Idol song you pick to play over the boss fight, it actually is spaced out in a way where different measures of the song have different effects in the battle. So there's certain areas of certain songs where the boss will get powered up and you're weakened. Other areas where you're powered up and the boss is weakened. And other areas where you kind of go into like, you can go into like super resonance mode and go like have like a cool like team dance attack or some weird shit. It gets interesting in the way where it's like, again, it doesn't reinvent the wheel per se. But it's an interesting little quirk to how the battles work. Even if you press pause, the music stops and you go into like a generic menu music. And then when you unpause it, it goes right back to where you left off on the track. Like, it's literally meant to do that. And if you want, you can switch music tracks during the battle. They bring up a more opportune track for your battle situation. It's an interesting concept. And I ended up liking it. So,
well, overall, the game is sitting at $50 on Steam and on PS4. What do you think about it?
I will say it is worth it. If you like Neptunia games in general, it's worth a buy it under one condition. I meant to mention this too. unlike pretty much every other Neptunia game, this one is subbed only, no dubs. And I believe that that is because of the whole V-Idol aspect, because it wouldn't make sense to have like English speakers and then Japanese V-Idols talking. So they just left it all Japanese. So if you don't care about that and you like Neptunia games, I think you'll still get a decent amount of fun out of this. If you don't like, if you're indifferent to Neptunia, but you're okay with V-Idols, I'd give it a try. If you don't like Neptunia and you don't like V-Idols, oh, fuck, just don't. It's a very specific review structure here, but overall, I had fun with the game.
Cool. Good stuff. No, all right.
That's cold. That's cold.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Retromania Wrestling, developed and published by RetroSoft Studios, released March 23rd on Xbox One for $24.99. Just released today on the Switch and coming soon to the PS4. Retromania Wrestling is a pick-up and play arcade wrestling game with beautiful 2D sprites, incredible backgrounds, and fast-paced arcade-style gameplay. With 16 playable characters from legends up to today's superstars, Retromania has something for everyone. You have what it takes to step into the Retromania Wrestling ring. Tim, of course it's you on this one. What do you think of Retromania Wrestling?
Of course it's me. It's good. And buy me. It. All right.
We both played.
Could have been me.
Yeah, Cole, you totally would have.
Don't forget about me.
So, Tim, what do you think?
All right. So, I've had my eye on this game for a while. It specifically, you know, calls to mind an old 90s game called WWF WrestleFest, an arcade game. Just with its visual style, a lot of, like, just other little details with the game. Like, that is what it is cribbing on the most. And if you don't really remember that game, that's okay, because I don't really remember it that well either. It was an arcade game, so, you know, I might have played it, like, once in the arcade and then never again on emulator, but it is well-regarded. So this is, you know, trying to go for that style of, you know, some big chunky wrestlers in the ring, a kind of fast-paced, more arcadey pick-up-and-play sort of wrestling game in the modern era, which has its challenges, foremost of which, you know, the roster in this game. Like, so for a casual person on the street, they probably won't know anybody in this game. Depending, maybe you probably, if you have any experience with wrestling, you probably will remember the Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal. They're in this game. They were also in WWF WrestleFest back in the 90s, which is great. If you watched wrestling in the late 90s, well, you might remember the Blue World Order. Thank God all three of those guys are in this. But mostly, like, you gotta be a bit more of a hardcore wrestling nerd if you're going to be familiar with even like half the guys in this game. But that said, as a, you know, big hardcore wrestling nerd, I am pretty impressed with the cast they were able to assemble for this game, and who they went for. You know, they have some older Legends guys, like I mentioned, the Road Warriors, and then like Nikita Koloff and such. They have the entire fucking Blue World Order. They have Tommy Dreamer in there. But then, you know, they have NWA champion Nick Aldis. They have Johnny Retro, who is John Morrison, who is currently on the WWE roster, but signed onto this game before that.
Yeah, it's cool that they were able to keep him in the game. I know WWE likes to step on things like that, but
yeah, well, it's a good thing that his persona is kind of so malleable that, like,
yeah, he's not John Morrison in the game. He's Johnny Retro.
Yeah, he's always Johnny something wherever he goes, so it makes it very easy for him to just jump into that stuff. Well, they have Colt Cabana. He's in AEW, though I don't think they would give a flying shit. you know, Zack Sabre Jr. and Jeff Cobb, who mainly wrestle in New Japan. The recently, you know, Brian Myers and Matt Cardona, who were just released by WWE last year, and they're both in the game. And then Warhorse is in the game.
Yeah.
Independent wrestling champion Warhorse, who I've only been familiar with for about 8 months at this point. And I guess for what it's worth, they already have characters DLC characters lined up, and possible. Well, they have three announced, and then they have more coming down the road.
I know they have Chris Bay and James Storm. Who else?
Curtis Hughes, Mr. Hughes.
Ooh,
yeah, fuck yeah! I just love this weird mix of just like, just like Mr. Hughes. Fantastic. He's got a great face.
I'm excited about James Storm. I like him.
Somebody has to be. I don't care about James. Whatever. No, it's fine. But that's like a good get for the game, you know. And they said like in their FAQ on their website, like it is harder to get wrestlers than you might think, because even like, you know, old guys are somehow tied up with WWE in some way because they have a Legends contract or something, you know.
Yeah.
But they did a good job, I think, with just assembling the roster. But anyways, the game, there is it is a very well put together, well detailed, like well thought out and fleshed out game. Like you get in there, you have a story mode, you have a arcade mode, which is called 10 Pounds of Gold, where you're wrestling through a bunch of guys to then fight Nick Aldis. The story mode, you're following Johnny Retro as he's coming back from being injured by Zack Sabre Jr. And he comes back from injury and he's helped back by Stevie Richards. And they're like, okay, well, you're coming back from injury. You've done all this stuff. What do you want to do? And he's like, well, I want to beat up Zack Sabre Jr. I want to wrestle the Road Warriors and I want to be the NWA champion. So it kind of sets up a three-act story, of which only one act is currently in the game. Like, you get to the point where, spoiler, you beat the shit out of Zack Sabre Jr., and then it's like, to be continued as you go back to the United States to get into a tag team tournament to wrestle the Road Warriors, presumably at the end of it. That just it got straight up not finished in the game yet. Just says, to be continued.
Makes me wonder if that'll be DLC or a free update. Have they commented
better
on
not
that?
Better not be paid. I'll say that. You can charge for more characters, but don't charge for the rest of the story mode, guys. I don't know if there's a specific comment on that, but that would be real sour if they charge for the rest of the story mode. But my hope is that they realize they shouldn't do that. And they'll just, you know, charge for characters if they want to go that route. So story mode is pretty fun. They, you know, they kind of have to make their somewhat limited roster get some mileage out of it. So, you know, early on, you do see a lot of the Blue World Order. And then when you go to England, you still see quite a bit of the Blue World Order. But, you know, then Jeff Cobb is also hanging around. They got to stretch these guys out across three acts. So, hopefully, as they add characters, they can
beef up the story.
They can beef up the further chapters of the story as they add more characters in, not have it with just so the few that they have. And then you have, you know, your versus mode where you can set up all, which is probably, I think, where most people are going to spend their time with this game, and that they are going to get a bunch of people in there to have cage matches and fatal four ways and six man tags and all that shit going on. It doesn't have like the expansive match variety of like a modern WWE game, but you know, it's not a total disaster in every other way like a modern WWE game. So column A, column B, I mean, what do you need, you know, more than a solid steel cage, really?
They have two steel cages.
Yes, they have the chain link one, and they have the big blue bars WWE used to have when it was an F. So you have all that. You can set, you know, no countouts, and a few other toggles. I guess I was a little bit disappointed that, like, as far as weapons, they kind of just have like a couple chairs lying around, and they weren't particularly satisfying to use. But whatever. So the actual wrestling. The focus of this game, you have light, medium, and heavy strike attacks, and when you wander up to a guy, and also running, you can just wide a run, and taunt, and there's a taunt button, and then tag, you know, a couple other utility things, but it kind of does the Fire Pro Wrestling thing where you will, when you wander up to a guy, it will initiate a grapple, and then you have to time the press of your button correctly in order to get priority on executing, you know, your move out of the grapple. And if you and your opponent tie, then it's a, then the, it's a tappy. You got to mash it out to see who wins. And from there, you know, there are, you can push a direction with the button, with the attack button, to do a different move. So each character will have a pretty decently sized moveset, you know, all things considered for the arcadey nature of the game, but they will have a good, like, dozen different grappling moves. And if you hit Y in a grapple, you will then, you know, send your opponent into the ropes, and then you have light, heavy, medium coming out of there. You can send them into the turnbuckle, and then you have corner grapples. So that's cool.
Splash attacks in the corner.
Yeah, splash attacks in the corner. You can, you know, of course you can come off the top rope. It doesn't have like springboard moves, I believe. But that's a pretty robust amount of moves, you know, to get you through the day, I think. And I think the animations look really good. If you are a fan of the wrestling and the moves, you know, some of them can be a little bit abstract, I think, but you know what they're doing. Like, I know, like, oh, that's that weird thing where you slam the guy down on your knee and then you do a reverse Russian leg sweep and slam them on their face. I get that move. Yeah, so I think the animations generally look really good. Each character does have a special, which they aren't. Well, I mean, I guess the company itself did post on Twitter, like, here's how you can do all the finishers, but it's basically, you have your life meter, and under that is like your momentum meter. And so you have to build up momentum in the match by doing, first you do like light attacks and light grapples. And if you try to do a heavy attack right away, it'll just get reversed and, or broken, or it'll just fail. But once you get a bit of momentum, then, you can do your medium grapples. Once you get a bit more momentum, then you can do your heavy grapples. And once that meter is full, if you know where your character's, how to do your character's special move, or basically where it's initiated. So, you know, I figured out, like, oh, Johnny Retro's finishing move is the Starship Pain, which is his flipping senton out of the corner. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, I wonder if I whip the guy into the corner and do my heavy grapple attack, if that will make that move come out. And you know what? That makes that move come out. I was playing as Jeff Cobb, and I'm like, okay, well, usually he catches guys in his finisher coming off the ropes. So if I throw a guy against the ropes and then I hit heavy, will I do Tour of the Islands? Yes, I will. So you can, if you are familiar with the wrestlers and their moves, you can kind of figure it out. But otherwise, just look at their Twitter, because they just tell you where you need to grapple your opponent in order to do the finisher. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of just grappling them and then you do it.
In a direction.
And it happens. Yeah. But it's not like you have to remember a Mortal Kombat finish him button combination.
Thank God.
Finisher. Yeah, no, it is just, you just have to be in the position to make it happen. So it's cool. It's fun. I had a little bit of trouble getting the timing of the grapples early on. And I bumped the game difficulty down to non-existent just to kind of learn it a little bit. And then I bumped it back up, and then I was having a pretty good time. And then I was having actually a bit too easy a time. So I needed to bump the difficulty up again, like once I kind of got that basic timing down. But yeah, it seems like a thing where you can get people, you know, a room full of people in this game, having fun, doing grapples, throwing each other around, getting mad at each other, and having a grand old time. And even by yourself, like, there's a decent amount of characters in there, and there is the story mode and the arcade mode where you can sit down and have a lot of fun with it on your own.
Yeah, but this will be a good one for your vaccine parties.
Yes. Once everyone gets vaccinated, get everybody in there to play this game. What else is going on in it?
The achievements are awesome for the most part. Really inventive, really cool achievement list. There is a broken one because they just had to put one of those fucking get all achievements in the game worth 200 points, and it's broken. So,
why is it broken? Oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't activate. Oh, because it's an achievement itself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, because, you know, PlayStation has their platinum trophy, so people have to force that achievement into the Xbox list, even though it's always broken. Always. Stop doing funny. It.
I can sense that's a pet peeve of yours. And
oh, yeah.
For me, I don't care because I don't pursue achievements anymore.
I have a lot of achievements in this game. I'm at like 600 some points of achievements in this game. I've been playing it like crazy. I love this fucking game.
Yeah. There is also, so there is a lot of arenas in this game. Like, each character has their own arena, which is not something I expected. And some of them are, like, really well detailed with, like, the amount of characters and stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I have to shout out the stage that's set in Philadelphia, local Philadelphia convention, Too Many Games. Like, that was, I was just like, that was a trip. I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. And then seeing, like, table, there's a limited run table set up straight behind the ring. By the way, I think we were talking last week about the pitfalls of buying a game and then limited run bringing out a physical release later. That is already happening, so I guess that might be one reason to wait on the game, is if you want to get the physical release. Then there's the music, which sucks. Fuck that guy. That's a joke. I'm friends with Dan, who made the music, and he did a good job. It sounds like crunchy 90s wrestling music. Like, it makes me think of, like, Saturday Night Slam Masters.
Yeah, it's a really good soundtrack. He did a good job with it. Very Genesis-y.
Yeah, exactly. When I say crunchy, that's basically what I mean. You know, really fun track list names as well. Which is how I figured out he was doing the soundtrack, because he posted the track list, and I'm like, oh, that's funny. And he said he had a game coming out the next week. I'm like, oh, that's funny. That Retromania wrestling game's coming out next week. Oh, wait. So yeah, the soundtrack is great, as well. A lot of fun to just very appropriate to the whole vibe of this game. Like, this game does not falter in any way in capturing the style in the moment of wrestling game that it is going for, and does an incredibly admirable job of, like, getting that roster together and still having it be modern, you know?
Yeah.
They really, like, for what they were going for, they really knocked it out of the park. I had a blast with it.
Anybody that you want to see in the game, or anybody you're surprised wasn't in the game?
Well, again, it's tough to say because of, you never know who is under a Legends contract. They specifically had to answer the question of where's Demolition.
Yeah.
But they couldn't get Demolition in there. They're probably copyrighted because WWE copyrights gimmicks.
Yeah.
So
I'm legit surprised we didn't get Rhino.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I could see Rhino. Especially
his affiliation with ECW and how much ECW love is in this game.
Yeah, but I think they have to find guys that are, like, truly, like, more independent. Like, maybe Cobb has been independent for a long time, and I think he still technically is, and so is Zack Sabre Jr., but they just work mostly in New Japan. I'm trying to think. Well, they got James Storm, and he's not an Impact at the moment, I'm guessing. But Chris Bay is
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, James. So, I think James Storm, they signed him when he was away from Impact, and then he went back to Impact, and there was an issue with having him in the game. But apparently it's all worked out, and that's why he's going to be DLC.
Who they need to get is fucking Glacier. How about that? Get fucking Glacier in this game, god damn it. You probably can't, because it's owned by WWE, but they should be able to get fucking Glacier in this game.
That would be beautiful.
Yeah, we'll just, I don't get know, Sub-Zero. Maybe they can get, they have a couple people, well, no, they have exactly a couple of people in this game that are dead, both the Road Warriors. Maybe they can get Chris Canyon in this game. That would be sweet.
Who better
to get in this game than Chris Canyon, right?
Yeah. But, well, $24.99 Retromania Wrestling on Xbox. I just saw the price on Switch is $29.99. What are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, no, it's an absolute buy for a wrestling fan. It is something I think you can get people into casually. There is not a lot of great wrestling games. There's not a lot of wrestling games, period, out on the market right now, much less great ones. And this is a pretty great one. I haven't played a ton of wrestling games, but it's definitely, like, the best one I've played in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad we got to cover it. Invites open to the developers. Come on the show, please. We'd love to talk to you.
I get the feeling that they might be somehow local to Philadelphia if they put specifically Too Many Games into the game. And, Hey, we've been to too many games.
Now, Raider Biz is saying that it's a launch price on Xbox for $24.99. It's supposed to be $29.99. So, there you go. Normal price is $29.99, I guess.
Yeah, I think the only caveat on pricing is if they're going to charge for story DLC, which I imagine they won't. I hope that they wouldn't. But if they would, then that's like, hey, you suck. That's not a nice thing to do. Shit.
I'm ready to drop a couple bucks on James Storm and Chris Bay and...
Yeah, sure. Yeah, expand that roster. That's
Mr.
fine.
Mr. Hughes.
His name is Chris Bay?
Yep, Chris Bay.
Do you think he was playing on the word crispy?
No.
Oh, man. I heard that. I was like, oh, crispy.
He's dashing Chris Bay.
Uh-huh.
I've heard he's pretty good. I haven't seen actually any of his matches yet, but he's a young dude coming up.
Isn't he injured right now?
Might be. Yeah, I haven't seen him. See anything about him doing anything.
That's a rough bop. He's a dude coming up. He's injured.
Hey, you know, injuries happen. It's the biz, man. It's the biz.
That who else is got the biz?
Hey, you know what? You know who's not under WWE contract right now? Andrade.
Ooh, I would love to see him in this game. Quick,
get him in there. You know actually who they do need? They I don't know. Get fucking La Parca or LA Park as he is known now. He would be perfect in this game.
The chairman.
That is exactly the kind of like wacko late 90s like cult guy you want in this game.
The way Tim just said, do you know who's like not on contract right now? I was like, oh, did somebody just sub?
It was coming. 50 biddies.
Yeah.
No.
Chat.
All right, well, Tim, that is it for you. We will let you get going. That was a long review.
we're two reviews in, and it's an hour gone by on this podcast. Well, two reviews and one Purnell existential crisis.
Hey, you don't get to talk, because unlike you, I'm staying for what I created here the last 2 hours of the show.
Yeah.
Don't worry, y'all. Mine are going to be quick.
All right. I wish you well.
All right, you have any final words?
No, not really. Sorry. No. I got nothing. Not a damn thing.
All right. Well, you have yourself a good one.
Catch you later.
Oh, my Lord. Well, Chris, you said yours are short. We're going to find out because the next game to talk about is called Rip Them Off, developed and published by Lozenge Lab, released March 25th on Xbox One and Switch for $8.99. An all-new puzzle game experience blending the strategy of tower defense, the fast thrill of micromanagement, and original 1950s-inspired jazz music with gorgeous surrealist imagery-inspired geometric art direction. Chris, tell us about Rip Them Off.
That description's pretty much it. No, so this is a kind of take on, well, they call it tower defense. I like to think of it more like lemmings. But instead of controlling the lemmings, you're controlling the environment. Of course, all in the service of capitalism, because this is a capitalism simulator. In fact, they have the only real writing in the game is just like notes from corporate about how you're supposed to be making more money. And oftentimes they have like an asterisk in there somewhere. And then the asterisk is like some sinister thing. it's kind of like that, but yeah, the job is that basically there's a little stretch of street and a couple of buildings that you can access, whether, by the touchscreen or by, you know, the controller. And the idea is that you are to build a kind of shopping type retail place or restaurant or whatever it is, really. It's not actually, it's abstract, so there's not actually any real business there. You basically pick a shape, and with the shape comes a certain cost, and of course you start the game with a certain amount of money. You pick the shape, and the shape tells you basically how many people will fit inside and, you know, how long they'll take in there, and then how much, you know, money that you'll get from them being in there. And so when you start, you basically choose your building, you build it, and then the people walk into it. And then, you know, as it fills up, then if people are still walking by it, they won't get to go in, and then therefore they won't get to spend any money. Oh, no. And then the goal is just to get enough money by the end of the level, and you get to move on. So the challenge is, of course, to find the right building. Now, that's the thing, is that it's hard to strategize based on anything but the numbers, because you're literally picking, like, a square holds four people, and, you know, they're in there for 4 seconds. A line is only holds three people, but they're in there for 2.5 seconds. You know, a triangle is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, but as you play through the game, of course, you get more means, you get more money, and you're able to purchase new buildings in real time as you make profits. So, like, some levels, of which there are 10, well, one's a tutorial level, so let's say it's 9. You know, you get more and more buildings and stuff, and then you can, like, really customize and stuff. And the game actually is pretty challenging. Apart from that, I mean, really, that's, you know, the aesthetics of it is indeed 50s-inspired jazz. It's actually pretty good. I quite liked it. And, yeah, the design of the whole thing is this very featureless, you know, kind of... looks like, you know, pop art from the 50s and stuff, just like really blank looking buildings, blank looking people, but it's stylized in this way that looks kind of cool. And sometimes, like, buildings are, like, upside down and stuff, so, you know, it's got a little bit of a nudge there for you. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's more or less a puzzle game that is based on timing and, like, kind of resource management, but in this way that it's challenging, but it's also kind of simple. It's like, there's not a whole lot to stress you out here. You just keep trying stuff until you win and then make corporate happy. And of course, we all want corporate to be happy.
No, it's from the same developers who did Swim Out, which I really enjoyed as well.
Yeah, I reviewed Swim Out. That was pretty good too. And yeah, it's this kind of, you know, absurd take on, like, a normal thing. And yeah, I like where they kind of went with it. Like I said, you know, it hits that good spot of, like, you know, being difficult but not because you can't figure it out.
No,
it's just you just keep trying different things and eventually you get a good sense of it, and then yeah, you start passing the levels and suddenly hours have gone by.
All right, well, $9, what do you say about Rip Them Off?
Yeah, $9, I'd say this one's a good one. For sure, for your, like, folks who like the real-time puzzles. Like I said, you know, Tower Defense is a good describer. Again, I got more of a Lemmings vibe, but that's still kind of the same thing. You know, it's not the most hilarious game to deal with corporate shenanigans. That would be Vostok Inc. but go get that, too. I mean, yeah, it's a buy it from me.
Cool. All right, next up is Space Robinson, developed by Luxorix Games, published by Crytivo, released March 19th on Xbox One for $9.99. After crashing into an abandoned colony base overrun with hostile life, you must find a way to survive the elements. Armed at first with only a gun and a wrench, find friends and upgrade your way to victory. Cole, tell us about Space Robinson.
So this is a hardcore roguelike, and that's the long and short of it. It is everything you would expect for a hardcore roguelike. It does have a couple of little perks that make it slightly easier. One being that you can choose how many times you clone yourself so that you can try a run again if you die. The downside to that is if you decide you want to play classic hardcore mode, and you try to set it to 0 clones in the settings options, you're going to crash the game.
Really?
Every time. Hard crash, take you to the dashboard, it's gone.
Hmm.
So, good thing I'm a pussy and I wanted all the lives. I didn't care that I couldn't play it the old-fashioned roguelike way.
Like, oh, fine. No, I can't do hard mode.
Oh, no. Yeah, oh, I guess I'll take these 3 lives if you're going to thrust them upon me. Also, I went through them like a motherfucker. So the whole concept is you've crashed on this planet, and there is an abandoned space station, as there is wont to be. And you basically have to shoot your way through the enemies to find the artifacts on the planets so that you can bring them back to the space station and unlock different elements of it. I would like to tell you that I got to unlock all these really cool things, but I didn't because I'm trash. And I am trash because Well, because I am me, but also because Space Robinson has a day and night cycle, which is really unusual for a roguelike, especially a procedurally generated one. And it adds an extra layer of difficulty to a game that is already crazy difficult. Which is a damn shame, because I was really in the mood for something easy, and I'm so disappointed. I was like, let me shoot things and get achievements. Remember when we did The Story Goes On and it was like a super easy roguelike? I miss those. Give me that one back.
I like easy stuff.
This was hard for no good reason. I know that there are a lot of people who really enjoy the wildly difficult roguelikes, but I had a little bit of hope when it gave me the clone system and basically was like, yeah, you can die a couple of times, whether you like it or not, because we're broken. But when I saw how difficult the game actually was, I was kind of let down, because it makes that clone system necessary to get anywhere. And even then, it's still really unlikely you're going to get very far. The day and night system, during the daytime, you can see all around you, and you can see there's so many cool enemies. I will give them that. There are so many cool enemies, and you can see them, and like, they're fairly easy to dodge. At night, however, there are a whole different set of enemies, which A, is awesome, but B, fuck off. Stop making it harder. Because these enemies have their own movements and things that you need to be concerned about. And also, they really like to fucking swarm you, which is horrible because at night you only have a small circle of visibility. So you're being swarmed by enemies that have movesets that you can't see to memorize because you can't see them coming. And you're just stuck in like your little circle, hitting things with the wrench, going, please don't blow up, please don't blow up. And then it blows up, and you use your clone, and you go back and do it all over again. I would also like to say, I know, people really hate for the repetition of hold my hand a little bit, but I was getting purple crystals, and I have no idea what fucking for. I was putting them in the space station, and it was unlocking things, but it didn't tell me what the thing that I unlocked did. There was one point where I strolled up to some mystery machine, and I whacked it, and it broke, and I was like, okay, that's cool. I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. And then I went up to the next one, and I was fighting an enemy, so I didn't whack the mystery machine yet, because I was focused on the enemy, and I accidentally hit a button that bought something from the mystery machine. I thought I was supposed to break the mystery machine, not get items that were going to help me. Some kind of, hey, bitch, this is your equivalent of a shop would have been nice. There is certainly a trial by fire going on, and it is frustrating. Once you start to pick it up, then it's a little more like, okay, this is fine, and I know where I'm going, and it's still hard because the nighttime monsters are going to fuck your couch. But you at least get your foothold on it. I lost my train of thought there.
I can tell. Proud of you.
Woo! Gone. I need more Vicodin. Some ways the game feels like it tries to innovate on roguelike genre. And in a lot of ways, it's just like, nope, we're just a roguelike. Here you go. This is hard and it sucks. And you're like, you almost had it. You almost did something a little different, but not quite. If you like roguelikes, if you don't care if they're fucking crazy hard and you enjoy that aspect of them, you're going to have a good time. If you would like for it to at least tell you not to break the store, you might struggle a little more.
Well, overall, $10. What do you think of Space Robinson?
At $10, I'm going to go with a recommended try it. It's definitely not for beginner roguelike fans. But if you're more advanced and you're willing to buckle up for that trial by fire, like I mentioned, then you'll be okay with it.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Totally Reliable Delivery Service, developed by We're 5 Games, published by Tiny Build, released April 1st on Steam for $14.99. Delivery attempted. That's the Totally Reliable Delivery Service guarantee. TRDS is a ragdoll physics simulation about terrible package delivery couriers. work together using odd machinery, useful gadgets, and the wonders of physics to reliably deliver packages to their destination. Brunel, tell us about Totally Reliable Delivery Service.
Honestly, this is one of those you probably just did. Totally Reliable Delivery Service is a game where you start out and you build yourself a little character model. You give them a nice hat. You give them a top piece of clothing, some pants, and some shoes. You select between a bunch of available garments that you have accessible at the time. And once you've built your character, you say go. And the game dumps you into the middle of a downtown environment. Talk to the wizard. He opens a gate. And the game begins. And what is this game exactly? Well, you're given access to a very large map. And this map has other unlockable environments that can be accessed using either money or completed missions. Scattered throughout this map are a variety of different, vending machine stations where when you pull the crank, a package jumps out of it. And then you are given a delivery challenge. Take this package from point A, where you just acquired it from, to point B, where it needs to go. And depending on what your situation is on the map, you have a variety of different ways to take it there. Usually by way of foot, or actually not by normally, because half the time you don't want to do that shit. You can take it by foot, or you can unlock various vehicles using earned money from completed missions to use the vehicles to deliver the package to the location. Depending on how fast you do it, or in the case of some missions, how pristine it is when you get it to the location determines your score. You get a gold, silver, or bronze trophy. And you do this throughout the entire game. You run around and you make these deliveries. Now, you might have heard me describe it in this manner and think, wow, he's really being a jerk about this premise. And that's wrong, because premise-wise, I don't have any issues with this game. I mean, I've played Moving Out. I love Moving Out. I've played Overcooked. I love Overcooked. All games with one very simple premise used ad nauseum throughout the entire game, but it is fun when played either alone or preferably with friends. However, I do have a problem with this game. It's a pretty big one. And that problem is the gimmick that they use to add the humor, being the ragdoll physics and the wacky-tacky controls, for me anyway, ultimately were a detriment to the game. Because here's the thing. So I like the idea of ragdoll physics. I've played games like Gangbusters game, and I've played Human Fall Flat. Games where basically the whole idea is like, look, my guy moves like Jell-O. I'm falling over the railing. This is fantastic.
Cole, you love those games, don't you?
Yeah, they can kind of wear thin real quick, though.
Yes, and I'm glad you made that comment, because normally in those games, the fun ultimately just boils down to just simple fact that I'm a ragdoll with ragdoll physics flopping around on the mat. You play it and have fun until you get bored of it, and then you move on. This game took the ragdoll, I'm a floppy doll physics, and then tried to slap an actual goal on top. Deliver crap from point A to point B. What ends up happening is you are beating your head into the goddamn wall fighting the controls in hopes of getting something to work. Now, I know people are listening to me right now. They're going, get good, Scrub, get good. And I'm responding to you by saying, fuck you. I know how to get good. I understand. I've played games that function like this. And by that, I mean you have the two bumper buttons. One bumper triggers controls your left hand. One controls your right hand, and there's another button that controls both. And you can grab onto the objects and basically use the hands to grab the objects. For example, let's say you want to pull the lever to dispense a package from a machine. You use your right hand button to grab the lever, and then you push the control stick down to drop the lever, and your package comes out. Easy peasy, beautiful cover girl, right? Yes. Now, the problem is, once you try to pick up this package and then try to cart it to any location, it all falls to shit. So, for example, you want to pick a package off the ground? Okay, you might want to use both hands to pick this package up because it's a fairly big package. However, sometimes the guy will pick it up and his hand is dragging the package behind him because the way the hand grabbed it, it wasn't particularly in front of him. It was kind of off to the side. So now he's dragging around like he's like his arm's broken or some crap. Sometimes you want to try to load an object onto a vehicle. You press the button that lets you raise your hand, let that button go to put it down. but doesn't want to quite set in. So now you got to jump into the damn thing to make it flop onto the vehicle, to make it rest on top. But if you fall the wrong way, your character's lying sideways. Ooh, wacky! Oh, so now you got to get him up, and that's a pain. That's an annoyance in and of itself. And then, the biggest annoyance for me, you get in the vehicle. Time to start driving. That's the fun part. Except it's not, because the package never stays in the fucking car. It just doesn't. I guess if you're playing two players, you're going to have a guy sitting in the backseat holding a box or whatever, which doesn't sound very fun to me, I'll admit. Being the guy holding the box while the other guy's driving the car doesn't sound like a great time. But essentially, the thing never stays. I found myself getting into a car and driving the thing and going very slowly when you should be trying to beat a fucking time to get the package to where it needs to go, and failing because it just keeps falling the heck out. Helicopter, not much better. I found a mission where you had to take a oil barrel, put it onto a helicopter, fly it across a river, and deliver it to a factory on the other side. Very simple, straightforward concept. Pick up the barrel, set it on the copter, pilot the copter, land the copter. Here are the problems, though. Getting the barrel onto the helicopter was always a pain in the ass, but I got to the point where I was able to pull it off. The barrel was extremely fragile. If you bump it the wrong way, it explodes. Your mission fails. You got to do it again.
Yeah.
How fragile is it? You can walk into the barrel and blow it up.
Yeah.
Lastly, let's just say, it's not even last. There's another step. Piloting the helicopter is a pain in the ass. You basically hit one trigger to accelerate it, but that also raises and lowers it. So it's like, okay, I'm trying to balance between raising, lowering it, and actually piloting it and pushing it. Sometimes while doing this, the barrel would just fall the fuck out. it would just fall off the helicopter. And then here's the biggest annoyance, the end coup de grace. Let's just say everything worked, the stars were aligned, and I flew it all the way across the river. Now it's got to land on the roof so I can drop it off into the delivery barrel. If you don't land the copter just right, the barrel blows up. Mission fails, and now you got to run across the freaking river on foot, as in run down to the floor, ground floor of the factory, run down the street, over the bridge, and to the location to do the mission again. It was annoying, and I did it for a fucking hour before I just said I quit. I can't. And it frustrates me, too, because this is a game that I've seen on, like, eShops and stuff. And I'm like, this is a game that looks kind of fun. I should buy this. But I don't have a lot of people to play it with. So maybe I shouldn't. But I want to. And I know what you're thinking also. Well, maybe if you just play with friends, you'd get it, Pernell. Well, like I said before, moving out is better with friends. Overcooked is better with friends. I've got other date lovers in a dangerous space time, better with friends. But the big trick with those games is even though they're not as efficient, they're still fun solo. They still work. Having friends just makes it better. This game drove me nuts. I did not enjoy myself. You might be saying, okay, so Perno, how would you fix it? It's hard to say with this game because the gimmick is the thing I don't like. The gimmick is the thing that made the game play poorly. So, I don't know, maybe ease off of the ragdoll for the purpose of actual package delivery? I don't know. But as it stood, I just couldn't get into this title, which is sad because I wanted to. It just didn't take.
Yeah, Root Beer in chat saying they weren't a fan of the game either. Doesn't sound like you enjoyed it too much, but $15 on it, I gotta ask, what do you think?
This will be 2021's first deny it. It had to happen eventually, right?
Yeah.
Did it really take this long for you?
Yes. The thing about it is, like, I'm generally...
Man, I'm a cruel reviewer.
Well, it's just how I typically run these things. Like, I'll go across a game and I'll get to the end. It's like, okay, well, it's not a complete deny because I can think of this being good for some people. Like, maybe even with this one, I can say if you have four friends who just want to run around and flop around the ground for an hour and then go, I'm done.
Yeah.
Maybe you try it. But even that, there's better games for that even. Like, there's really no reason to buy this for ragdoll physics fun. Because there's better games for it. Go buy Gang Beasts instead.
I will say, I like totally, this one. I can't remember the specific word.
TDRS.
Yeah.
Nope, TRDS.
See how jaded I am.
I do like the delivery service game better than Gang Beasts. I didn't like that one.
See, there it is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, Definitely sounds like the problem I had with Goat Simulator.
Well, that one has like ragdoll physics too with a goat.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, it's the idea of it is that it's broken.
It's been so long that I don't remember. I just remember like the goat like having like a rocket boost at one point, you like shoot up the street. But I don't remember him having I don't remember the ragdoll part.
Oh yeah,
like, the goat's totally ragdoll. Stuff, but yeah, and it had all this stupid stuff, but none of it was like that fun to play.
It's like I think it's because we're old.
No, because
think about like ragdoll physics work when you don't have a tangible goal that you're trying to actually accomplish. Because when you're trying to accomplish something and you're fighting the way the game is designed to do it, it fucking sucks. Like, it's just not fun.
It's not the Sumatori Dreams effect. Have you never played Sumatori Dreams?
Mm.
Okay, it's like, apparently it's a $1 game now, but it used to be free. It was like under a megabyte too. It's like such a efficient thing. It's this really low poly like sumo game where all it is just one sumo player against another sumo player, and you just try to have a sumo match. But the controls are so bad and the ragdolling is so bad that like that is impossible. But it's a huge laugh. It's like it's legendary. It's like from like 15 years ago too. But Sumatori Dreams, you should look that one up. That's my favorite ragdoll game.
You know, I have to give it a look-see. Or, heck, just link it to me.
Facebook. I'm going to drop it in chat and stuff. But I think this version is still... Yeah, I think it... Oh, yeah, this is... I don't know. There's, like, some other stuff in here now. It looks like they've added to it. But still, a little but very serious physical fighting game. This is the game where beginners can beat hardcore players. It's because nobody can control it.
It's all luck of the draw.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Danger Scavenger, developed by Star Drifters, published by Forever Entertainment, released March 25th on the Switch for $9.99. The evil AI brings doom upon the world. A group of outcasts, the scavengers, once rejected by fate, now glorified and admired, decide to overcome the status quo and, of course, loot on their way and return to their hideout with a bag full of great treasures or broken scrap. Chris, tell us about Danger Scavenger.
Okay, so Danger Scavenger is the other end of, like, you know, the consequences of capitalism, because, you know, the world's kind of like in ruins because of some kind of corporation or something like that. And your ragtag team, is trying to bring down some bosses on rooftops for some reason. I can't say that the game really gets that much into the story, so neither shall I. the whole gist of it is that you select one of four, you know, rock 'em sock 'em roguelike robots, not robots, but you know, your guys and girl. I think one of them's a girl. I don't know. The graphics aren't super detailed. But either way, you pick one of your four characters or two unlockables eventually, and they each have like a different aspect to them. And it's your usual one's a balance, one's a tank, one's speedy, and another one is very good with items. And you basically do this interesting thing where you go to the top of of like one of five different towers. You know, you progress through five different towers with multiple levels. And, you know, it's roguelite, basically, and we'll get into that in a minute. But basically, all the combat takes place on rooftops. So I guess each floor has its own rooftop kind of thing. I don't really know. But you take, like, a branching path as well, and it's kind of cool in that sense because, like, you know, you open the door to the next floor by defeating all of the enemies, and you can choose from the doors, and the map will actually tell you kind of what to expect in that room and what kind of reward you'll get. And the game's really all about the rewards, because, you know, you gain currency, which is actually just called scrap. And that's something that you can use to make new items and things like that for your loadout or that will appear in the stage. Hang on one second. My cat's being a butt.
Kitty.
The door's open, stupid. He's scratching the open door.
Wow, such so I would let him animal in. Abuse.
I know. Oh, I know. We're very verbally abusive to our cat. That's our thing. His nickname is Stupid.
I had a dog as a kid. My mom insisted on calling Dummy, no matter what I did.
It's fun with animals because they don't understand. They just hear the tone and they're like, oh, this is my loving human referring to me lovingly. That's why I scratch at an open door when I want to come in. Anyway,
danger scavenger.
Yeah, back to the game. So yes, you get to choose like you know, your way to the top where you fight a boss, and once you beat the boss, you can access the next tower. So the actual gameplay of it is run and gun and it's like a twin stick shooter basically. You know, one stick aims and, you know, one stick moves, the other stick aims, and then, you know, you use your dodging, your roll dodging and your shooting and stuff. And you get a melee weapon in this one, which is cool because you do have limited ammo. However, of the hours I've played this game, I never once ran out of ammo. They're very, very generous. And when I did some digging, it looks like when it was back in Steam Early Access, people complained about the ammo. So I think they were just like, fine, we'll give you all the ammo you want. So there's like,
you treasure chests. Want ammo, we'll give you your ammo.
That really seems to be how it is. Cause not only do you get ammo drops from enemies, which by the way, is magnetized to your character, so you don't have to go run and look for everything, which is really nice. They did some good work here, making it a nice, like, efficient experience. Like, you don't have to, like, grab the goodies or they'll disappear. They just come to you. There's also, like, these treasure chests that kind of look like igloo ice chests to me that are scattered all over each floor. And so, you know, and then, of course, you have a point system as well. I'm not sure what the point system is for. Like, I keep getting high scores, and I'm not sure where they're going. But you get bonus points for shooting a robot thing and having it fall off the roof. So, you know, there's some nice little perks to that. And I'm like, I don't care about the points, but I like seeing that robot fall off that roof. So, dick. That's really nice. And, poor robot. And yeah, well, he was shooting at me, so... Oh. What could I do? Anyways, so yeah, the game allows you upon death. Well, there's two different modes. We're going to go and talk about arcade mode. That's the easier kind of mode, quote unquote. And it allows you to keep all of your scrap that you have gotten in a life, as well as three weapons that you've picked up, or three items, I think, that you've picked up through the course of the run. So, like, you do actually have an aspect of, like, you know, roguelite elements, which, of course, the difference there is roguelites let you keep stuff sometimes. But it's not, like, a total, you know, you get to keep everything. But eventually, you unlock, like, item crafting and things like that and item combining. And so there's lots of good possibilities there. But the weapons that are already in the game are actually really good. My favorite one so far is a gun that shoots a beam that when the beam hits something, it splits into eight parts. It's like an eight-way shotgun. And I had a lot of fun with that one.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's got really good, satisfying combat. Like I said, it's got cool, like, alternative ways you can get to the top of the roof. And then on top of the arcade difficulty, it also has hardcore difficulty, which is straight up roguelike. You lose everything if you die. You know, everything needs to be done in one shot, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't play as much with that one because I like them a little. I like the roguelite element more than I like roguelikes. But, yeah. You know, if you took the arcade thing and took away everything I like about it, that would be the hardcore mode, which, of course, but I like that it's available. That's a nice thing. The only thing that when I first started playing it that I was like, oh, I don't know about this, was the screen shake. Because it does screen shake every time some impact happens. And I was like, this game's already a little lo-fi on graphics. Like, I don't want it to be shaking while I'm trying to dodge bullets. But fortunately, you can turn that completely off. So
that's good.
I did that for the rest of my time. Sorry, y'all. I know that screen shake looks cool, but it wasn't working for me. That's for sure.
I usually turn that off too. That and like any kind of like film grain filters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no CRT mode or anything like that. Oh man, remember when we complained about that on Odalis and Onikin, and then they like released a patch and fixed it? Oh, I love that. Brad and then they went on to make Blazing Chrome. They went on to make Blazing Chrome, which is one of my favorite running guns ever. So
thank you.
Good job, y'all. Yeah. All anyway,
right, so $10 on Danger Scavenger. Did we do that part?
No, we haven't done that yet.
Okay, so $10. What do you think?
$10, yeah. Actually, I mean, that's the sweet spot on price for this thing, because, I mean, it gives you a lot of replay value. There's lots and lots of loot to grab, and it's exciting to play, and I kept going back to it. But, you know, it doesn't have that AAA feel or anything, and it doesn't need to. I'd say this is one of the better roguelites that I've played, possibly the best one in 2021 so far, I'd venture to say. So no, that Zelda like game I played was really good. So there's two really good ones I've played so far. But this is one of them. I actually like this, and I'll be returning to it, and I give it a buy it.
Cool, sounds good. Yeah. All right, next up is Escape from Life, Inc., developed by Power Burger, published by Sometimes You, released March 31st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. Escape from Life, Inc. is a quirky, story-driven puzzle platformer where you switch between three animals, a walking fish, an arrogant eagle, and a stuttering reindeer. Together with plenty of wacky characters, help these three unlikely friends escape the alien lab. Cole, tell us about Escape from Life, Inc.
I played through this game, and I still don't understand what the fuck is happening in this game. What an odd one. You start off pretty mundane. You're a fish in some water, and your fish mom is doing fish mom things, and then you leave to go to school, and you get sucked up, and then you're on an, then it cuts black screen, and then you're an eagle flying around doing eagle things, and then another thing happens. I'm trying not to spoil, but also give basis for what happens, and it's just as weird as it sounds, okay? Then you are a reindeer who gets yelled at by a bear in a Santa suit who's basically telling you you're a shit reindeer and you're not gonna make the team because you're not like Rudolph. A lot happens here, okay? And I don't know how any of it is supposed to make sense, even in the context of this game. It's just such a weird combination of events. You end up on an alien planet. Somehow they have decided to get the fish legs, but that doesn't change the fact that the fish still you swap between the three characters to solve puzzles, and one of the puzzles, the way you use the fish is anytime there's water, you jump into the water and use the fish. And then sometimes you have to fly to reach things, so then you gotta switch to the eagle, and sometimes you gotta bash things with your antlers, so then you switch to the reindeer. And the whole point is to get through the levels to the next level with some puzzling platforming that requires you to use each individual creature's abilities. But who the fuck thought it was a good idea to put feet on a fish?
Who thought the 15-year-old solo developer behind this game thought it was a good idea to put feet on fish?
Kudos to them. Why?
15 years old. That is pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
I'm fucking 40, and I haven't done shit in my life, and this 15-year-old kid has a game published. God damn.
Yeah.
Kids these days. They're going to change the world. Days.
I hope he's not listening to this review, because I think I said fuck a few times.
Oh no, Cole said fuck.
I'm sure he said it more times while programming the game.
I have a teenager who likes to program, and I can confirm I have seen her text messages and the word fuck comes out a few times. It's a thing. It's such a weird game. I give them credit for the creativity aspect of it. From the gameplay side, it's maybe not the most exciting thing you could play. It's one of those that you kind of play as a novelty just because it's weird and you can be like, hey, I played that, you know? But I think the bigger accomplishment is that a 15-year-old solo dev did it more than anything else.
Yeah, that's impressive to me. We talked to how many developers who are like, you know, it's my dream to get published on the Nintendo store. And this 15-year-old kid just comes in and here we go. A game on the Nintendo store, on the Xbox store, on the PlayStation store.
That kid is not as old as the Nintendo DS.
Oh, my God. That hurts.
He was born the same year the Switch came out.
Wow.
Not the Switch. I'm sorry, the Wii.
I was going to say the
Switch. I'm old enough to mix up the Wii and the Switch.
Well, Cole, $10 on Escape from Life, Inc. What do you think of this one?
Oh, I think it's a try it. It's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that it's odd and a little niche, and it's not going to apply to everybody. And that's kind of why it's a hard sell as a buy it. But if you're into the quirky, weird kind of games that just kind of make you bend your brain to even understand what's happening, you're probably going to enjoy it.
How are the achievements?
They're actually, I don't even remember. I don't think I popped, but maybe two or three. And I just remember playing through it and going, I'm not getting very many achievements for a sometimes you game. But I don't even remember what the list was. I'll have to look now and see if I even got them all. I don't remember.
Anyway, next game to talk about is Far S Ultra, Future Aero Racing S Ultra, developed by Neuronsoft, published by Zero Uno Games, released March 26th on the Switch for $6.99. Challenge gravity in the races of the future. Enjoy the fast and futuristic arcade races we present to you in Far S Ultra. Make sure you win the desired gold cups in the 5 championships of Far S Ultra. Our 5 levels of difficulty and total of 25 cups are waiting for you. Ernell, tell us about your time with Far S Ultra.
Okay, so Far S Ultra would be a game that would appeal to folks who are fans of speedy racing titles like Wipeout or F-Zero, or heck, that game I reviewed, 2 weeks ago? Almost, oh, it was Pacer, right?
Yeah.
The name throws me off. I'm like, is it Pacer? It's Pacer. So this game is a similar moniker to the whole speed racing game. However, there are a few things that make it a bit different from what we're used to as far as the fare is concerned. In this game, you choose a general cup, basically going to the championship mode and choosing one of the 5 cups. So initially, you can only do the starter cup, the electron cup. And each cup, as mentioned, has 5 different difficulties associated with it. Good luck getting past the first one or two. So start it out there right now. I mean, it's doable, yeah, but it's not as simple as you would think if you're like, oh, I've been playing these games my whole life. But no, it's definitely challenging. So once you choose a cup and a difficulty, you'd have to pick a car. Initially, you only get 1, but you can earn more, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then you get knee-deep into the actual races. Each cup has 3 actual race courses on it, and the way racing works in this game is there's no weapons on the track. It's just general acceleration. There's like a hard left turn and a hard right turn button. There's a brake button and also a nitro button. You start out with some nitro. Actually, I don't even think you start with nitro. But as you go over speed tiles, you get a speed boost, but you also get some juice in your nitro gauge. And after, it usually takes about 2 of these tiles, but when you run over 2 of them, you get a full blast of turbo that you can use. And it's just basically press the button, blast up the turbo. While you're in turbo mode, if you crash into another car, you can blow them up. That's considered a takedown. Of course, that can happen to you, too. And it's going to happen. And it sucks when it does, because it's usually a guy coming up from behind you. You don't see him. It's like, bam! Like, well, I'm fucked. And aside from that, you also can just use it to literally dash and just get an extra boost of speed. You also have a shield gauge, too, and if you run out of shield juice from either getting whacked by other cars or scraping up against the wall, your car will blow up and you need to respawn. Long story short, if you respawn, you can kiss like at least two positions goodbye on the track. They don't screw around with blowing up. There are no shield regenerators on the actual track. The only way to actually get your juice back is by making a lap. So 1 shield bar, 1 lap, unless you blow up, and then the respawn refills your meter, but at that point, the damage is done. So, after each race, you will get points for a variety of things. Experience points based on how you place on the track. So, if you place it well enough, you'll get a good number of points. There's also a light achievement system in the game where when you fulfill certain objectives during races, you will get experience points added to that based off of those. And as you level up, you'll unlock specific things. Generally, you'll unlock new cars. And the cars that you can unlock bring along with them a variety of different stats. You know, the usual fare, you know, speed, acceleration, braking and handling, that kind of stuff. So you'll be doing, you'll be handling that measure there. But you'll be unlocking those cars and the drivers that come with them. You can also unlock different, like, actual paint jobs for, not paint jobs, but, like, costumes for the actual racers. So each racer is a racer that drives each car, and then that racer also has, like, a general, like, paint scheme or whatever. And unfortunately, as much as cool as it would be to say that it affects your actual car, it doesn't. That part is just purely meant to, like, add the, make the car itself look different, because it's like the driver gets a different car. So you'll be unlocking that stuff, and you'll unlock like different courses too over time as you play through the game, basically through the cups. Now, I don't know per se what you're really getting when you complete its difficulty level, aside from maybe just more points. It's kind of like how Mario's 150cc would work, I suppose. But at the same time, that's just something for you to do. Hey, I want to do higher difficulties. You do the higher difficulties and get new cups to unlock and just basically max out your value that you're going to get from the game. There's also like customization stuff that you can unlock too, like customize like an actual race set. So you can be like, hey, I just want to putz around and have a little bit of a fun set and not play an actual cup. You can do that too. But I feel like you won't be doing that for a while, because really, it's just like the cups, except you're not getting anything for it. You want to do the cups to unlock the stuff. But that's pretty much the gist of it. There's not a lot going on with the game otherwise, but at the same time, it's not really priced to, like, you know, blow your mind or anything. And they
it's only a $7 game.
Yeah, and honestly, I had fun with what I got from this. Again, it's not deep, but it's fun. And it gives you just enough stuff to pursue to kind of give you something to pad out your time with the game until you feel like you've, you know, had your fill of it. And by that point, I'm sure you'll have gotten $7 out of it.
Now, well, in your eyes, your official verdict, $7 on Far S Ultra, what do you say?
I think it's a buy it, honestly. If anything, the only real knock I felt against it was the music is kind of hum.
Not bad. Sounds pretty good.
It is.
All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called One Escape, developed by Bug Studio, published by Rattlake Games, released March 26th on Xbox One, Series X, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. One day, three buddies decided to rob a bank, but something went wrong and the cops showed up. Now these feisty felons need to smarten up and make the most incredible jailbreak. Chris, tell us about your time with One Escape.
Okay, so this is the other side of corporate. No, I'm just kidding. No, this is a this is an odd duck of a game, and I use that word
literally.
Pretty literally. You play as one of three criminals. Well, one at a time of three criminals, and who are in jail. And as soon as you start the game, they rip off their shirt, revealing like huge pecs and six-pack abs and stuff, and the first character you play as is a duck, so you're playing a duck with abs. It's like, okay, his name is Duke, D-O-O-K, Duke.
I love the names in this game. They're yeah, pretty
Duke, Gore, and Boar. So yeah, basically it's a puzzle platformer, essentially. Each character has one thing that they can do. They can jump, double jump, and then they have one skill. The idea is to go through the jail and collect things in a certain sequence. So, like, you may need to go and find the red card to unlock the red door, and in the red door, there's the green card, and then you can open the green door, and there's the yellow card. You can then grab the yellow card, open the yellow door, and then eventually you get to an elevator for some reason, and you escape. And you have to do this, I think it's 20 times per character. I don't really remember, but it's 60
levels.
60 levels, yeah, three characters, 20. And by the way, if you're an achievement hunter, you have to be able to beat 10 levels with each character, so you have to play through about half the game to get your platinum, so it's not that easy. Not a gimme, but like some of them, but that's, you know, you don't have to beat the whole game, I don't think.
No, I only got my 1,000 and only got halfway through each one.
Yeah, see, there you
terrible.
Go.
Terrible.
But
what do you expect, Cole? Be honest.
I did the same thing.
You did the same thing. You goddamn right you did the same thing.
Yeah.
I want to say how annoyed I am that these characters are so buff and ripped, and you can't fight with any of them except one.
Yeah, and the one doesn't really fight, because if you get caught, you still go, you still lose, you know? He can mostly fight crates and walls. Right? Or am I wrong?
No, he can actually beat up the robots. He only has 2 hit points, though.
Oh, I see. Okay. So yeah, so
he's still
you can only attack if there isn't an alert on you.
Yeah,
if
that's what I guess.
If you trigger them and get alert, you can't attack them at all, though.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is that, you know, while you're trying to get through these stages, of course, there's searchlights and security cameras and stuff that if you get caught, then you have to start the entire stage over, which can be a kind of a pain when, you know, you're required to do so much sneaking to get, like, a certain, like, card or whatever, and then you have to, like, do all that again just to, like, figure out what you did wrong. And there's a couple of little things that annoyed me, like floor hazards. So, like, there's broken cables on the floor sometimes that give you electric shocks. And, like, I eventually just had to, like, really exaggeratedly, like, double jump over each and every one, because it seemed like I would be, like, you know, a whole sprite away from them, and I'd still hit them. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. They just... What I was seeing on the screen was not what was actually really going on. Having said, I mean, it is pretty interesting to, like, work out the, like, the different ways that you can, you know, get through the stage and, like, you know, what you have to do and all this stuff. Like, it turns your brain on enough. And like I said, the 3 characters have 3 different things they can do. Like, Duke, the duck, can crawl into smaller spaces and stuff, which, you know... and then Boar, which is the warthog, he's the one that can punch, I believe. And then Gore, who is, I guess a bull, right?
Or it's a gorilla.
A gorilla, that's right, because his name is Gore. Yeah. See, I was trying to remember, and I was like, ah, crap, I can't remember.
He hangs on to the cracks in the walls.
He can, yeah, he can climb. And so, yeah. But yeah, like, that's basically all it is just get through all the stages with all the characters and try to get out of jail.
Cool. Sounds simple enough. $5 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, it gets into, you know, fuck it, why not territory right there. I mean, it's not my favorite Rattalaika game, but, you know, it also, you know, it's exactly what it, you know, says on the tin as far as that goes. I guess one escape, it's actually 3 escapes, but we'll let that slide.
No. All right. Yeah. Cole, any thoughts?
No, pretty much the same. I just agree with Chris. Like, it was just easy and simple to run through, and I think I did it in probably, like, about 30, 45 minutes. I didn't think it was that hard, though. Even to, like, I continued to play a couple levels past just so I could be like, I didn't just stop when I got the achievement. I did go a little more. you know, because that matters. Nobody cares, but it matters.
I didn't think it necessarily got hard. I just think it got too backtracky.
Yeah, like
they were just getting too long, and when you would die and restart, it was just like a kick to the balls. It's like, oh, that was 5 minutes.
That was really the only thing I had to really complain about it, I guess you could say, is that it was a lot of back and forth. It was like, okay, you got the green card. There is no shortcut back to where you can use it. You have to go all the way back the way you came every time. And so then there was a lot of go to the left to get the green card, go to the right to get the red card. Oh, now you can go back past where you got the green card again to go a little further to get an orange card.
Yeah.
Like back and forth. And that was pretty much the only thing to really fuss about.
Yeah, the difficulty was in the frustration of it, not the actual, like, level design or, you know, anything like that. It was just like, it was just frustrating when it, when it was, like I said, it wasn't, like, too bad for the most part.
No.
I definitely struggled more with the duck than with the other two.
Yeah.
Some of the later levels.
The duck is definitely where I encountered the floor problem.
Yeah. Like, well, the gorilla, too. I had problems with the gorilla on the jumps. I was double jumping everything just to get past it.
Oh, okay. So it was a universal problem in the game then.
Yeah, the hitbox was good shit, but otherwise it was fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one.
Hooray!
Next up's the fun one, Cole.
Oh, boy.
What's that?
666 is next.
Ooh, also, I'm getting my second Moderna shot that morning.
Yeah. So that's going to be really goddamn fun.
And it's April Fool's tongues. Day. It will be a rough one.
It will be a rough one indeed. But we'll cover that one when we get there. That's it for this show. Thanks to Tim for being here talking wrestling and Retromania wrestling. Thanks to the three of you for being here, hanging out, keeping me company. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Time to go get my laundry out the dryer. That's
of course
right.
You have laundry.
Working the business. Doing my dance.